Hi everyone, welcome to Girl Speak, a podcast series by Girl Museum, the first museum in the world dedicated to celebrating girlhood, bringing you a girl's eye view on arts, culture, and history. I'm Ashley E. Reamer, founder and head girl at Girl Museum. Today's podcast is a fun conversation between myself and our resident scholar, Elizabeth Dillenberg, about Girl Museum turning 15. We reflected on Girl Museum growing up over the past 15 years and where it will go in the future. So I'll get right into it. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
It's wonderful to take this time to talk about the past 15 years of Girl Museum. In many ways, it seems unbelievable that it's been 15 years. So can you believe it's been 15 years? And what does it mean being 15?
Wow. Well, yes, exactly. I can't believe it. It's so, Girl Museum is so tied into my life and who I am that I find it hard to believe 15 years has literally gone by. But at the same time, it has been such a journey, so much joy and challenges. And I've felt so really honored to be able to do this work that while 15 years is a long time, it also has kind of flown by, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just been a joy to even be a small part of it. And I'm just in awe of all that Girl Museum has done in the past decade and a half. Could you tell us a little bit about how Girl Museum started?
Sure. So basically, I was looking for a job. And this was, I had just finished my master's degree in art history. And I was living in New York City. And I was looking for work to put my degree to use, which is what we all kind of hope to do when we do higher education. And unfortunately, this also coincided with a certain little thing that happened in 2008. Which was a recession, an economic crisis. It was yeah. No fun. It was a really bad time. And the result of that in the city was that just people were not hiring in the art zone. I did get a few bits and pieces of freelance work, but it just wasn't enough. And so I volunteered, which is my goes back to kind of my entire life's work. I've always volunteered. My family have always been big on volunteering. So my roots are in the theater. And so I started volunteering with a theater group that was really formative for me because I really saw what you can do with not much money, but a lot of passion and calling on your network and all the people that you kind of have surrounded yourself with throughout your life, and as well as the theoretical kind of concept of how art and advocacy can intertwine, because this theater group was based around George Bernard Shaw, and who himself was a big advocate for human rights and animal rights and all sorts of important social issues of his time. And so I was like, yes, that's what I want to do. I want to do something that uses my background, but also marries that with making a change and making a difference in the world. Excuse me. And so it seemed like the right time when I couldn't find a job to start my own thing and take kind of control of my own path. So I started a nonprofit, and that was Girl Museum. So it always was this idea from the start, because I'd always been passionate about women's and girls' rights and art history and anthropology, and all of those things were sort of what I did. So Girl Museum seemed kind of the natural thing that came out of all of my ideas and all of my passions and my research interests. So I started the nonprofit and got some people together who I knew to be on the board, and we founded it in Florida because that's where I'm from. And yeah, we just kind of got the ball rolling from there. I mean, the internet was kind of a baby. At the time, social media certainly was not really even a thing that people cared about. In this time, I think I just had gotten a Facebook account went around the time that I started Girl Museum. And I mean, I had to learn HTML to build the website. It was that kind of from the ground up building. And I just imagined what it would be like to be a museum, but be completely online so that I could be anywhere to run it, and I didn't have to worry about, costs of managing a building or paying rent or getting a plumbing leak, any of those sorts of things. Like, I wanted to not have the sort of traditional issues. We certainly had other issues being virtual, but yeah, it was an amazing challenge, and I feel like over the 15 years, we've really grown up with advances in things that we do on the internet, like social media and stuff. We've grown up alongside, both taking advantage of those things as well as being ever so slightly resistant to them as well. So over those 15 years, I amassed like a growing and shrinking as the time went on, team of interns. And then the interns slowly became a senior staff, all volunteer, of course. And that was really amazing just to see how many people there were out there who believed in the mission, and who wanted to contribute and to be a part of what we were doing, which of course grew as we just went along. Like, we responded a bit to the world, but as a museum, it's your job isn't necessarily to react to what's happening. It's sort of to take it in and reflect on it kind of after the fact. So we've tried to strike a balance with that, which is really hard in this world of like immediacy that the internet and social media demands. But it's been it's helped us grow probably as people, and it certainly taught me about running a business and running a nonprofit and balancing all of the things that you need to balance to get the work done, but also to protect your team and to make sure everyone is learning and growing themselves. So yeah, that's a long story long.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so interesting to hear how you had this really unique and original idea to have this virtual museum, but then also the ways that you were able to make it a reality. I mean, I think I personally would have been so daunted by the challenges of it all that I would have been like, oh, that's a good idea. But it's just really interesting to hear you talk about how it got started and how it grew. And I wonder maybe if I could just ask you a little bit more about, what the past 15 years has been like. And you alluded to this a little bit before, but I wondered if you could just talk a little bit more about the past 15 years and how Girl Museum has grown in that time.
Well, I think what's really unfortunate is it's almost a pre and post pandemic kind of memory at this point. Like, the further we get from it, I'm sure that will kind of change. But Girl Museum did so much work the first, I guess you would say, it was about 10 years before the pandemic. And we initially were doing projects that were related to things that I loved. Like, my interests are quite varied, from anthropology and art history and also social issues. So a lot of our exhibitions reflected those initial research ideas that I had, which a lot of them had come from discarded ideas for my master's thesis and for all sorts of ideas. So that's how we kind of started our path. But then I advertised for interns at on this site that is very well known to in the museum world, the University of Leicester in the UK. They have a great job board. I think it still exists. And so I advertised for interns and got, I think, three or five or something that first year. And it was just so fantastic. These young women were enthusiastic and just couldn't believe that this kind of opportunity existed. And so we created this thing kind of together, because I'm very democratic about how I do things and don't want to necessarily tell people we're going to do something and that's how it's going to be. We kind of talk about it to make sure that it's the path that we want to go down. And so we started, you know, the blog because we had someone who was interested and had skills in editing. So that person became our editor. And then we had someone who's interested in education. And so we started, you know, the first bits of the education side of things. So it naturally kind of grew out of the people that became involved. And then we really got quite big in kind of the second set of 5 years. And we did tons of work. We had a huge team. We got to the point where I believe we had like 35 people on the team, which was quite enormous, and you know, senior staff, but then our, you know, junior editors, and we call our interns junior girls. So we had people working on exhibitions. We had people writing blogs. For a time, we did a newspaper that was all about the girl news, which was incredibly depressing. We wanted to keep things positive, but boy, oh boy, it was really, really hard. And the amount of work that was required. And that was kind of a thing that happened just online. People did online newspapers and then they kind of went away. And so we've ebbed and flowed based on like what platforms have become available and what apps are out there. And we try new things. And then also we go, yeah, that doesn't work for us, or we don't really have time to do that because, you know, as I said before, we're all volunteer. So people can only give what they can give, and that's great, and that's totally fine. But that's meant that some things stop happening because we can't manage it anymore. But yeah, so we grew really big during that second 5 years, and then the pandemic really was. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say, it was quite shocking and quite traumatizing for everyone, and of course it was. But what happened with Girl Museum that was both wonderful and trying was that the world was shutting down, but what the world was also doing was going online. And so personally, for all of the team, we were struggling with like what was happening in our real life, in our daily life, our physical life, but the demand for content and the need that came out of the pandemic was so great and like increasing. So we felt very obligated to provide as much as we could for the people. Unfortunately, that resulted in a lot of people burning out, which, you know, that's understandable. We didn't know how long it was going to go on. So we didn't know necessarily how to pace ourselves. But for example, you know, there were students who were at university and their internships got canceled. And so they needed an internship to graduate. And we really, really felt for people that their lives were being so turned around in a way that could be so lasting. So we took on interns, we took on virtual interns. For some of them, it was the first time that their universities had allowed them to do virtual internships, which is great, providing those opportunities for these people. But the sneaky part that I was thinking was possibly just such a great thing for us about what happened in terms of technology in museums during the pandemic, was that everyone started to appreciate the online and the virtual. And we'd been fighting for so long to justify who we are and what we were, and that we were worthy and worthwhile, even though we don't have a physical museum and physical space. And the pandemic just was like, oh, okay, everyone is getting it now. Now, I will say that did not change how people fund. So it hasn't changed. Whereas as museums that already had funds, they now have built up their online footprints and their online offerings. But I can't say it's actually trickled up, this idea, to governments and to funding agencies, because still we have to, we don't qualify for so many grants and funding sources, because we don't have a physical building. So on one hand, the pandemic did, you know, raise our profile. So, you know, certainly we would rather it not have happened, but it did. But it hasn't given us, that next level step up that we had hoped, that people would see the value in our work, the people that have money and give money to those sorts of things. So that's unfortunate, but now we're coming, you know, we are supposedly post-pandemic. So now we're sort of reassessing, rebooting. We've got a lot of really wonderful projects on the go, and we've had tons of people who have found us through their, you know, online time during the pandemic. So we've had so many people reach out to us to do new projects and different collaborations. So that's been really terrific. So it's 15 years. It does seem like at this stage to be broken up into sort of all of the great intense work that we did, and then kind of this pandemic sort of trauma time, and then now kind of easing back out of that and sort of going, okay, what do we look like now? What do we want to be doing now? What's worth our time and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting to hear you talk about the pandemic, because, you know, it's almost easy, I think, now to forget about just what a challenging time that was. But it's interesting to hear you talk about how it presented both these challenges and opportunities as well. And you spoke about the impact of the pandemic in particular, but I wondered if you could just talk a little bit more about the challenges and successes of running a virtual museum. And again, this is something that's incredibly, it's a new and unique idea. And so, you know, I imagine that there's a lot of challenges within that, but I wondered if you could just talk about the successes and challenges of building Girl Museum over the past 15 years.
Yes. So I'll start with the challenges. So the main challenge that I think is just ongoing is that sort of justification that we're real, we do good work, and trying to convince the right people who make decisions about funding to believe that and to change how they do things. Like, that is an ongoing challenge that I don't, you know, I'd love to see become not a challenge anymore, but who knows? So alongside that is raising money. I am not a fundraiser. I'm not particularly good at it. It's not something I enjoy doing. And I've always pretty much worked in the nonprofit arts sector. So raising money has sort of been something I've been aware of for a very, you know, practically my whole life. And I've always shied away from it. I'm not good at asking. And so that's a character flaw for me. And we've done well in the sense that we're still around. We've been able to raise enough money to keep all of the things that we need to do each year going, which of course those things increase all the time. The security, right now we're very secure. I won't say why, but we are. But we were hacked back in, I'm gonna forget now, I think it was 2018, but it may have been 2019, on International Women's Day, which is something that happens, is that women's and girls organizations get cyber attacked on that day by the lovely trolls out there. So we had, you know, a huge challenge where the site was basically destroyed and we had to rebuild it, but also we had to figure out how to make it safe. And so that costs a lot of money to be able to do that. And then alongside raising money, are the challenges of this new world of how to market oneself and the challenges of social media and algorithms. Because, you know, when Facebook and these things first started, people saw what you put out. Like everybody who followed you pretty much, you know, saw your ask for donations or saw your posts about what was going on. And now it's like barely even a single digit percentage of the people that follow you see what you're putting out there. So I don't really think that everyone understands that, how deep that actually is and how hard it is for businesses who basically live online and have to market themselves that way. So that's an enormous ongoing challenge. And we need, we would love some volunteers who are experts on marketing, social media, and fundraising. So if anyone out there has those skills and would like to donate some time to us, we are open for you. Please, please get in touch. So those are our main challenges. So alongside that, we haven't been daunted by not having money. We've always just found the way to get through and to do good work without it. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't be paid for their work. I absolutely believe that. And if I was getting paid, then I would basically feel terrible if I wasn't able to pay other people. But I don't. Like, we're all volunteers, so we're all in the same boat and we're all, you know, mission driven. The Girl Museum's mission, you know, to promote and support girls and to advocate for girls and to showcase the history of girlhood so that, you know, we can celebrate the past and we can learn from the past and we can show that girls have been awesome and rad and been doing amazing things since the beginning of time. And so let's value girls more in the future. So people who believe that and who want to help promote that mission have come on board. And that has been one of our great successes, has been providing opportunities for so many people, so many interns. I'll say for women, because we have only had a handful of men interns that have worked with us, but we are open to anyone who wants to apply. So that's their own bias for not applying. But I mean, literally, we've had hundreds of interns over the past 15 years. At first we were keeping a count, and then we kind of lost count. So it would take a mission to go count it up again. But so many people have worked with us, even just I've had a micro internships where people have only worked for 2 weeks, but done really cool stuff, really great stuff. And then we had people who worked with us for over a decade and became senior staff. So we benefited from their wonderful contributions and their skills and their wonderful minds and thoughts, but they also got the opportunity to do work with us. And so that, you know, I feel like it was a very mutual thing. We've done some really fantastic exhibitions, some on our own, some collaborations. And I think those have been really successful, even if they weren't sort of the most widely commented on or received. I think some great work, even, you know, happens even when it's small. And so it's been wonderful to be able to collaborate with people around the world and meet so many amazing people like your good self, who reached out to me to, you know, to be a part of a panel at a conference, which was, you know, I was so shocked and honored at the time. And then it was such a great experience. And then our, you know, friendship and working relationship has come from that. And so many times that's happened, it's been really fantastic. And personally, I've had amazing opportunities to go to conferences and get to share the work of Girl Museum internationally. And that has led to, you know, just really, really strong connections and people who support our work and promote our work in other places. And it's come from just, you know, just keeping going, like just not giving up when things got too hard or where we didn't have enough money and all those sorts of things. It's just a bit of diligence and a bit of stubbornness and all the those sorts of qualities that I have. But yeah, it's been definitely the successes have outweighed the challenges, I think. And I feel proud of what we've achieved. And we have so many things kind of in our back pocket of what we would like to do that I'm just like seeing into the future of things that I can't wait for everyone to find out about.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that is, you know, you talked earlier about the democratic nature of how Girl Museum is run. And I think that's really so interesting. It's such an important point, you know, drawing on the strengths of everyone who's involved. And I mean, one thing that I really appreciated with being involved in Girl Museum, I became involved because I, of course, was interested in girls, girl history. But I mean, is sort of the sense of community that I found through Girl Museum, which is not something that I was expecting to find. But it's been very interesting, and to be a part of that community and to learn so much about the work that people are doing about girls and girlhood. I was wondering if I could ask you. So I know that this might be a somewhat difficult question to answer, but you know, what do you think the impact of Girl Museum is? You know, and again, I know that that's a really difficult question, and probably it impacts people in a myriad way, in myriad ways, I'm sure. But I wondered if you could just speak a little bit about the impact of this museum.
Sure. So what is really fun about us is that because I'm not a numbers gal, I am very averse to analytics and all of those sorts of quantitative ways of measuring impact that, of course, funders want to see. They want to see data. They want to see all of these things. And we do have those things. We don't not do it. But to me, that doesn't measure impact. Because we're virtual, we don't have a home community where we can literally go out and ask people, how have you been impacted by our work? So we had to change the way that we thought about what impact was. And so in the first instance, Girl Museum we were the first museum in the world dedicated to girls and girlhood. And we were the only museum dedicated to girls and girlhood for many, many years. Then I won't say exactly names because I can't remember the exact order, but that I think one or two emerged in the US in the past couple of years, and then one in the UK, which is fantastic. And there should be more. There should be many, many, many more. There should be one like in every town. So we sort of measure. So part of that impact is, it was like really cool to be the first and only, and now it's really cool to be the first and hopefully inspiring others to do their thing and make theirs. They can do global as well, or they can be local. And I think local is really, or regional or even national, is just really important. And that's part of our advocacy is, you know, go to your local museum and ask them about girls and what they're, you know, are they collecting girl objects? Are they collecting girls' history? Are they telling girls' stories? That's what we want people to do, because the power can go out. You don't have access to us if the power's off, but your local museum is there. So we want people to be connecting to the real physical world through what we do. When we do an exhibition of art, it's not to stand in for you going to see those artworks. Although for some people, they will never have the funds, the resources to be able to go see those original artworks. But for those who do, we can inspire them to go see those things and ask those museums and say, hey, make a comment or make a phone call and say, this painting is really important for girl history because blah blah blah, and you don't even mention it. Why is that? What's your policy about promoting girl stories? So it's just we want to disrupt the real world systems through our online system. That is one of our original kind of mission, probably unspoken, intentions and goals. And so for our literal impact, how I think about it is we get comments from people. People tell us, this exhibition really made me think differently about this, or this blog, I had no idea this person existed, or I did know about them and had no idea they did that. And those are how we kind of think about, okay, this kind of thing is what people really like and what they're interested in. And even if we get something wrong and they tell us, that helps us learn and grow. And we have the benefit of being online that we can change what we've put out there based on finding new information or being informed by others that there's new or different information. We've got that luxury, whereas I say a hard copy museum, there's much more red tape to go through to change words on a wall than for us to change words online. So I feel like we are able to, where I said before, we don't actually react, we interact with our community and respond to what they need and what they're asking from us. The other way we measure impact, which I have, one could argue this is complete nonsense, but I feel like in the past 15 years of Girl Museum existing, there has been such an increase in interest in girlhood as a field and the girl scholarship that whether or not we have played a role in that, I can't know, but I do know that based on you finding us out of the blue, like, there's we're out there and people can find us. And recently it's happened for many years, but particularly recently, I've had a huge increase in professors and teachers reaching out to us saying, we've been using Girl Museum in our class to look at this, that, and the other. And can we work with you? Can we do a project with you? Which is wonderful and fantastic. And we want more people to do that. But we've had girls write us and say, I used your exhibition to do research for my book report or for this or for that. And I've been interviewed by an 11-year-old. I've been interviewed by high school students, and they've all come to me. To us. And so we're out there. And so to me, that's how I kind of how we measure it, and so that's what makes us feel good is when we get that kind of interaction and go, okay, all right, yes, carry on. It's we're getting there. Girl Museum will never be done. We will never have researched everything. People can absolutely stand outside and critique us for not having done an exhibition on many important topics, but they of course don't have the privilege of our research list or our exhibition schedule to know that we have so many topics that we're looking at and trying to see how we would do, how we would approach them as exhibitions. And that's something that, that's like any museum. Nobody knows what the schedule is, past a year. So it's just something that we have to, I'm happy to take that criticism and respond to it to say, ask us what we're doing and what we're about. But that's also about who gets involved with us. So because, like I said earlier, a lot of our projects they came from me originally, and then they started coming from the team and the team's interests. That completely ebbs and flows about who's on our team. And so that's why we really that's why the algorithm makes me so angry, because when we put out advertisements or when we want to gather people from all different places in the world and interests, it's hard to reach those people because of limitations of social media. But the more diverse our team is, the more we can drive those a range of exhibitions. And so, you know, there are a lot of women that have worked with us that have had what some might say very traditional girl-oriented research interests, so dolls or clothes or, you know, those sorts of things. And that's great. And that's all wonderful. It's just our output is going to look like that if that's who's working with us. So that's why we really, we look for as many people as we can to bring in lots of different interests and different goals. But it is my intention to keep on, you know, trying to change the world through little baby steps. and you know, we've made so many baby steps that we're now 15. So we're a teenager, we're kind of rabble rousing, we're kind of trying to figure out who we are and where we're gonna go.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, you know, I use Girl Museum all the time in my college classes. And I think one of the ways that I maybe first stumbled upon Girl Museum is I was doing research about girls in the British Empire and girls in New Zealand. And I was like, there's not really a lot out there about that. But then Girl Museum had these exhibits about these topics. And I mean, I still go back to those exhibits because they're just wonderful resources. And I always direct my students to Girl Museum as well. So I was wondering if you've talked a little bit about your vision moving forward. I wondered if you could perhaps just elaborate maybe more on your dreams, your goals, and, you know, and maybe too, what does 20 years of Girl Museum look like?
Well, it looks like me being really old, but that's okay.
Five years older.
Yes, 5 years older. And yeah, oh, I won't think about it. Yeah, well, in my dream, my dreams for Girl Museum extend past the 20 years. So I do see 20 years happening. But what I think we have learned from the pandemic is that having a five-year plan is important, but not relying on that five-year plan entirely, because you just never know what's going to happen. And the world is, I would say, less stable. Perhaps it was always less stable, but in bigger ways that are more impactful globally. In my personal world, I have always been traveling to work on different projects and to be in different places. And for a long time, I was based in New Zealand, and now I'm based in Southeast Asia. And the virtual office of Girl Museum allows me to do that. Our interns and our staff are all over the world. And that it becomes a difficulty when we're trying to make a meeting sometimes. But other than that, other than the time zones, it has worked out incredibly well. And we found such amazing people that are self-driven, that really want to be a part of this. And so my dream is to keep that up, to keep being able to do this in a way that works for everyone who's involved. And that seems quite small, but it's really, really important, because those kind of basic needs need to be met so that everyone's happy with what they're doing and wanting to help and contribute. I see expanding Girl Museum for sure, but we don't, because we don't know what the world's going to look like, and we don't know what, I mean, the changes that have happened on the internet in the past 15 years are almost unbelievable when you really look at it on a like year by year basis. And the platforms that have come and gone, and the notions of, for example, when I first started, I really was hung up on the idea of the website looking like a museum, like having columns and like feeling like you entered this space. And now I don't care. Like, it's too hard. It costs too much money. It actually makes me nauseous now to do some of those virtual walkthroughs. I don't like the feeling of it. So I've, you know, left that behind. So It's all of these sort of like it's the changing landscape of what's available for us to use as platforms to then, you know, expand our ideas of how we do our exhibitions. I think you can, I don't know if what great leaps are going to happen. I think people are still quite keen on the virtual walkthrough, but which I think is being highly promoted by so many real estate sites because people want to walk through, you know, a house that they'll never be able to afford to buy. And for us, it takes away the physicality that I thought we needed to embody actually takes away from the experience of just learning about these works and looking at these works, and understanding about girls' history. So I think we, in terms of tech, we're kind of not trying to push the boundaries so much. We've always pushed the boundaries of what a museum is, but for what we're trying to do, I think we need to use the internet and websites for what they do best. And I think that is simplicity. So on one hand, I'm thinking simplicity, and on the other hand, I'm thinking expanding the types of things that we offer. We're very interested in teaching and offering some courses to people on both on girl history, but also on creating virtual exhibitions. And you know, we're very transparent. We're not about keeping all of what we do and what happens secret. And we want to share it. We want everyone to be able to use the tools that they have literally at their fingertips and learn from them. And I can't say that I necessarily completely understand everything that's going on in the younger generations and how they're processing the fact that their entire lives have been online and they and are related to computers and phones and what that's going to do. Because as young people come up, you know, we try to find interns that are young, you know, just, you know, college age, so we can learn from them, like what's happening, what's going on. For example, TikTok, we have absolutely no interest. I have no interest in being on TikTok because of purely the amount of work it takes to do one thing. And I've had young interns say to me, "No, don't do it. It's not for us. It's not where we should be." And I appreciate that. I appreciate that we have the right to say no. We're not going to participate in spaces that we don't think are going to be healthy or helpful for how for what we want to do. So yeah, so it's so there's a balance, but yeah, we would love to teach, offer online courses. We've got a lot of collaborations coming up that could lead to other bigger things. We would love to participate more in scholarship and elevate girls and on that level, as well as collaborate more with organizations on the ground who are doing advocacy work in local communities, but also, you know, globally. Like I said, I live in Southeast Asia, so there's a lot of issues here that aren't necessarily the same scale as they are in, say, New Zealand, where I was living before. So that I want to be doing more sort of regional looks at things and getting more people involved, whether that is under the complete umbrella of Girl Museum or under a partnership or collaboration to expand people's thinking and understanding and awareness of really what is happening in the world with girls. Because post-pandemic, I mean, girls, I'm not gonna say the stat because I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's bad. The UN report that came out, I believe, a year ago or a year and a half ago, about the state of girls in the world since the pandemic is horrible. Like millions and millions of girls have not gone back to school. Millions and millions of girls have disappeared, and people don't know where they are. Like it's actually horrific, and there are some impacts of the pandemic that we haven't even really considered. Going forward as it pertains to girls. So yeah, I want to participate more in kind of higher level things. I would love for us to get involved in ways that I don't even know how, but with policy making or work with the UN women to help their mission and help them also focus on girls. So yeah, so we've got lots of ideas of where we could go and what we could do. It just is a matter of time and energy and human resource. And that's
yeah.
pretty much the bottom line of all of it. So yeah, so obviously at some stage I'll retire and we'll have to figure out what the plan is for who will take over and see Grow Museum to another level and to on a new path or the same path but broader or all sorts of things. I'm not ready to retire yet for mm-hmm. by any means, but yeah, I want Grow Museum to live beyond me, so I've got to be serious about, you know, over the next 10 years what that looks like and how we can have a succession plan. So yeah, it's exciting and daunting, and I guess I just haven't learned not to do things yet.
Yeah, no, I mean it's so exciting to hear about all these interesting ideas that you have and everything that you were talking about. I was like, oh yeah, of course we have to do that. But like you said, there's always sort of these limitations of resources. But yeah, I mean, all the ideas that you mentioned just seem really intriguing. And it was really interesting to hear your insights about Grow Museum and how it started and the challenges that you faced over the past 15 years. And I just wanted to conclude by saying thank you for taking the time to talk with me today, but also just thank you for all the wonderful work that you've done for Girl Museum over the past 15 years.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been, I'd like to say it's been a pleasure. It has been a pleasure. It has been incredibly hard work and incredible, like the loss of sleep and the amount of work that I've done has been, it's really incalculable, but at the mm-hmm. same time, it washes over me, you know, it all feels worth it. And I love Grow Museum. It's my first baby, and I'm so proud of the fact that we've gone this far and still exist
yeah.
and are still doing good things. And in fact, we have grown up, you know, so much as a organization, but individually and me personally. So yeah, it's been really fantastic, and I really am grateful to all of the people that have been involved and who've taken me under their wing and who've given me advice over the years. I have so many mentors. I can't honestly mention them because I'll forget somebody, but just from the museum world, from the art world, from the nonprofit world, just all over the place. And our board has been so wonderful, just, you know, keeping us going. And yeah, we have such great people around us now that I'm so happy and proud and grateful for all of those things. So thank you for asking me all these questions, because it was really lovely to get to reflect and reminisce, and it's great. Thank you, Elizabeth.
It was. Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you so much for joining us today and listening to our conversation about Girl Museum turning 15. Please visit our website to see what cool stuff we have going on this year. Lots of great stuff to celebrate our anniversary. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe so that it's easier for others to find us. And you can always leave us a lovely voice note. This podcast is produced by Grow Museum, an entirely online and volunteer-run museum dedicated to exploring and celebrating the art, history, and culture of girls around the world, in the past and the present. We're always open and free of charge, so head on over to growmuseum.org to learn more. Our music is by Chan Av. Finally, please help support the future of Girl Speak by visiting and becoming one of our Patreon members at patreon.com/growmuseum. Thank you and have a wonderful day.